getting out of that single family world and getting firmly into that multifamily world and building the whole thing, the investor list, the comfort level, the relationships, the ability to execute, building all those things was just a completely different animal than flipping houses and running a little rental portfolio.
It's time for you to live a life filled with happiness, blessed with prosperity, empowered by purpose. Here you'll learn the habits and decisions that will elevate your opportunities, add altitude to your attitude, and propel you towards the life of your dreams from successful pilots and entrepreneurs. This is the Plane Success Podcast with Alan Underwood.
Are you thinking of buying your first rental property? How long do you think it would take you to go from owning your very first rental property to being financially free as a real estate investor? Our guest today will blow your mind. His journey over the last 12 years has been from buying his first rental property to now owning over 5,000 units, having 75 employees, and starting a charitable foundation to do good for people all over the world. Today, our guest is Devin Elder. He's the founder and CEO of DJE Texas Management Group. They're a vertically integrated multifamily investment firm based in San Antonio, Texas. Devin is also a pilot. He's a podcast host. He's the owner of a real estate consulting firm, a real estate brokerage, and the DJE Foundation, a nonprofit whose mission is to improve the lives of disadvantaged children. I'm excited to have as my guest today, Devin Elder. Did you know that in the Philippines, there are over 2 million kids who are orphans? And in Texas, the children who are orphans or underprivileged has become a crisis. Today, among the many things that we will get to explore with our guest is how his success in life and in real estate is helping to alleviate some of the challenges with underprivileged children, both in the Philippines and in his home state of Texas. I'm excited to have on the podcast today, Devin Elder, who's the founder and CEO of DJE Texas Management Group, a vertically integrated multifamily investment firm based in San Antonio. He's also a pilot. He's a podcast host, a husband, father, and a million other things, I think, Devin, from what I've been able to see about you. I'm excited for our guest to get to know you today. Welcome to the show.
Alan, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to start with the introduction. I was intrigued by what you started in 2020, DJE Foundation, and the mission that you have there. Can you tell me about that?
Absolutely. In 2020, I'd had the company for a number of years, and we're starting to do these really big deals, $20, $30 million deals. And that was significant given that I started in real estate buying a rental house for $40,000, and I thought that was a lot of money at the time. And so things really escalated to the point where I left my job and company was growing and had some really huge wins. And it felt a little imbalanced. I felt like I got to a point where, not quite to the point of, hey, what is all this for? You know, I'm continuing to build. I love having companies. I love staying busy. But it felt like you needed some sort of a counterbalance to this pursuit of building these businesses. And it just kind of occurred to me that I want to be in business for decades, and let's set up a nonprofit and let's funnel some of the profits from some of these companies over the nonprofit. And over the years, I'll get better at it. I have no idea what to do with a nonprofit or how to do it, but I'm a big fan of just starting it and shipping and then iterating. So that's what I did. Started the DJE Foundation, started putting, hey, every quarter we're going to earmark profits from these companies. All operating companies, we don't put anything in the foundation from like companies with investor capital in it, you know, they're running properties. But some of our operating companies and some of my investments, okay, hey, it's going to go to the foundation. And then I just really didn't have any idea other than I kind of felt called to start it and let's see what happens. And so what has become a few years later is, and I've been after talking to directors of nonprofits, you know, saying, hey, I'm kind of lost with this nonprofit. But they said, no, you're right on track. You're a business owner. That's what you do best. You go do what you do best. And then you write us a check. Now, of course, the director of a foundation, you know, that's, of course, they're going to say that. But that made a lot of sense to me. So that's kind of what the foundation is now is, all right, let's just keep doing what I like to do and building businesses. And as the businesses are more successful, I love automation, right? So if the business is 10X, the foundation is going to 10X. It's just a matter literally of some accounting entries every quarter. And then, okay, then we got some money in the bank. There's $25,000 in the foundation account. Its operating expenses are like zero. So what do? Well, we're going to write a grant to the foundation that I know the director of, whether it's local or Philippines or whatever. So there's a handful of foundations now that we've gotten to build some relationships with that we can just write them grant checks. And it's the coolest thing. It's the coolest thing. And it keeps me motivated in a way that's different than some of the other motivations in business. So that's where it is.
So DJE Foundation has a mission to improve the lives of disadvantaged children. There's a lot of ways to make a difference in the world. Why was that one important to you, Devin?
Well, on a very practical level, when you're setting up a foundation with the IRS, you have to pick a code, right? So it's like all these things that it could be. And really, I started the foundation because of my friend Will Crozier, who did a bunch of multifamily deals a bunch of years ago and was like just completely crushing it in Dallas. And then he sent out an email to some folks, hey, and he was spending all this time in the Philippines. He's like, I'm starting an orphanage in the Philippines. I was like, that is so cool. I want to fund that. I want to write a check into that. And then that was really the start of it. So because it was the first kind of check was to Will's organization starting this Philippines, this orphanage in the Philippines, like, you know what? That seems as good a cause as any to help some of the next generation on planet Earth in some way. Right. And there's that story you've heard about the guy walking down the beach, throwing the starfish in the ocean. Right. And there's 1,000 starfish stranded up and they're all going to die. And a guy behind him says, you're not going to save all these starfish. It doesn't matter. And the answer is, well, it mattered to that one. Right. So I think that's a good outlook on this stuff is you're not going to save the world. There's no way. But does that one person that got a benefit from your involvement care that you didn't save the world? No way, right? There's no way. So that's how it came to be kind of focused around that code in the IRS code. And then we thought, hey, let's do some stuff locally too. There's a friend of the family that works with orphans here right in San Antonio, Texas through church outreach. And so it just kind of made sense that, hey, that's what we can focus on.
That's awesome. Have you personally been able to visit the orphanages or interact in any way personally? And if so, what kind of impact has that had on you?
Yes, some of it haven't been over to the Philippines. I just hadn't got that on the calendar. But some of the stuff here locally, yeah. One of them, a friend of mine, runs Aid the Silent, and they provide all kind of resources to deaf children and teens here in San Antonio. And I've been able to be a part of some of that stuff. And it just, man, it's hard to describe, right? It's hard to describe when you see the impact that some of these kids are having. So yeah, we've had some of that locally. And want to just continue doing that. I mean, I'd like to be in a position someday where you're writing some big checks. Now, you know, there's businesses around town that are writing huge checks as grants. And so it's like, it's all relative. I know I wanted that to be a part of the equation because I don't plan on throwing in the towel, retiring, anything like that. I like to work. And if the companies grow, the foundation grows, our ability to write grant checks, just to be very blunt, grows. And I can't possibly see how that is going to not work out, right?
Yeah. Now, what about with your own kids? Have they have any decision-making in the foundation? How are they involved or how are you trying to get them involved? I know they're probably at an age where, I don't know, maybe they care, maybe they don't care. I would love to hear how that looks in your family.
The way I think about my kids, my boys are 12 and 14 right now, my girl's 8, is they are not listening to anything I say. And I think
they're normal.
Yeah. But they're watching everything I do. And so I've just been real conscious. I'm 46. I've been real conscious for the last 10 years since my oldest was young. Hey, you know, how easy is it to talk and tell them they should do this and they should do it? Man, that's easy. How is it to go demonstrate that and not say anything? Right? Just demonstrate it. What is dad? Well, dad's got all these businesses. Huh. Okay. I see him doing it. All right. Well, dad's got a foundation and he got a drawing from these kids in the Philippines and they're saying handmade gifts and they're thankful and they see that. So we'll sit down and read them and look at it. So very much trying to model things for them rather than tell them to do anything or make them do anything. And that's it. I think that's, I'm okay with that being enough. I'm going to model it. And as they get older, I'm sure we'll expand that. But that's what it is now, is just trying to model behavior, whether it's like working out or whether it's business stuff or foundation or pursuing my dreams, so that they see me pursuing my dreams and that maybe that will inspire them to pursue their dreams. But always just trying to model it rather than tell them they should do this or that, because they're own people for sure.
That's the truth. Devin, it seems like 2020 was a big year for you, because not only did you start that foundation, but that's also the year that you started flying, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It was.
So was there a midlife crisis happening in 2020, Devin, or what happened that these things came up? Or was it just a matter of the business had evolved to a point where you had free time and some disposable income? What was going on in 2020?
Yeah, 2020, aside from COVID and it being such a wonky year because of the pandemic, I was thinking it was just kind of a natural progression. You know, grown the company, had some time, disposable income, the foundation, nothing special about 2020. That was just kind of when it made sense for me to start it, start doing that. And then flying was a lot of things, as you know. I mean, a lot of it is a new challenge. Gosh, man. And I started on a helicopter. So to go to ground school and kind of start from scratch was like this huge challenge. And I like it. I don't think I'm complete without a current challenge right in front of me. Aviation has checked that box among a lot of other things that it's done. But yeah, no special reason other than, hey, it really just a dream. You know, hey, man, what if I could fly a helicopter? What would that look like? Oh my gosh. And have this land business. Okay. Could it be a part of the land business? That was kind of when the dream came to me and I started chasing it.
When did you start dreaming about flying? And then I would love to know what kind of changes becoming a pilot has brought into your life and in your kid's life. Because I know for me, it isn't just an impact on my life.
Right.
But it's had a big impact on my kids.
Yeah. What did it for me in 2017? And I never really had an interest in flying growing up. I always thought it was super cool, but seemed kind of out of reach, general aviation. And I had a neighbor who was a friend of mine, and he flies a Piper, and we kind of talk shop. But what really did it was, we're in South Texas, so the, you know, we go in these R-44 helicopters, take the doors off, and go shoot hogs for landowners. So you're hanging out of the side with like a 12-gauge shotgun with 20 rounds in it, or an AR, or an AK, and a brass catcher. And a friend of mine, Justin Mayer, who's lives down by a ranch that we used to have in South Texas. I was buying some animals for my ranch. I was thinking I was buying some zebras or something. And I was with my son and we were meeting up somewhere to give him the check. And I said, how old do you have to be to shoot coyotes out of a helicopter? And he kind of looks at my boy and he's like, he's old enough. I'm like, all right, you see where I'm going. So my boy out flying the helicopter, shooting coyotes, best time ever. And then while we're doing that, I'm just watching this kid, Justin, he was probably 25 at the time, just master of this helicopter. And it was just intriguing for me to go, man, I want to know what all that stuff does. I have no idea what any of these gauges are. I have no idea what he's doing. But it's just kind of a new mountain to climb, right? A new thing to master. And then it was set me off on a path of, well, we live in San Antonio. We got a beach house down in Port Aransas. We got a ranch halfway. They're long drives. Could we fly to these things? I mean, how insane would that be? So just pursuing that stuff. That's what turned me on to aviation in general, though, was hunting coyotes and hogs out of a helicopter.
I've talked to a lot of pilots, Devin, and nobody's ever told me that they got into aviation because they wanted to shoot coyotes and hogs out of the door of the helicopter.
Well, I'll tell you what's even funner, and there's not a ton of pilots that have experienced this, but what the most fun flying I've ever done is actually being the pilot for the gunner. So my kids will be the gunner and you're trying to chase a live wild animal. You're trying to get low to the treetops, but safe enough. You're fighting the wind. You're trying to get your on the animal and then you're trying to get your gunner a still shot in a helicopter. I mean, it's like the craziest and your doors are off. So that is actually the most fun flying I've had, is being a pilot for a gunner in that scenario. But yeah, I recommend it if you.
I haven't done it, and I'm just going to book time to fly the plane down to South Texas, Devin, so that we can have that
experience. Come on, I'll take you out, man. Let's go. Let's go.
I'll actually be in Austin in a couple of days. So.
Okay, cool. Nice.
Yeah. So all of this is a really long way from where you started, and I was just at lunch this morning with a friend. He's got $50,000 or $60,000. He's trying to get started in real estate, and he asked me the question, with the guys that you know, the guys that are coming onto your show, what is the difference between them and me? And I said, well, there's really just two things. Is they took action and they've had a little bit more time doing it than you. They didn't start out where they are today. So as you look back, you bought your first house in 08, I think is when
it, later, it's 2012.
In 2012, okay.
I bought my first my first ever house to live in 2007 with a signature. Right. And then 2010, we bought our next house with this is the most like you get just different markets, right? 2007, 2010. But yeah, first investment property in 2012.
So what was the motivation behind that first one? What was it? And if you look back at the guy that was buying that house then, could you ever have imagined where you are today? And I'd love to get a snapshot of what that is too.
Sure. Not at all. Could not have imagined even remotely close to where things are at now. Now, I dreamed about it, and when I got started, I would write these things down, and they have magically come true, but I did not believe them, right? But I did dream about it, and I did pursue it. The first house of motivation was I had been reading and studying avenues to be an entrepreneur. I think I'm just not a good employee. I can't sit still. I got a million ideas. I think I was frustrated in the corporate structure by not being benefited from my ideas. You know, I would create some new thing and roll it out and really help this department or whatever, which any employee can do. But at the time, I just remember thinking, man, if I was running the show, this would actually benefit me. A lot of confidence and bravado and stupidity, but wanted to have the efforts of, I can be extremely, extremely focused. In an almost, I don't know if I have a disorder or something, but I can be extremely focused when I get a hold of something. And I figured if I went into business, that would be a benefit. So that was, I was just looking for a way to be in business. I didn't know what it was going to be. I'm reading all the books, ended up going to a weekend seminar on real estate, but I'd already been looking for a couple of years. And when I went to that seminar, I was, this is it. I've always heard about real estate. I just didn't know how to connect the dots and do it. These guys are saying all the things that I've read and think, and I'm going to go do it. And so you paid 10 grand to join a mastermind and you go start taking action. So that's what it was for me. Like I said, one single house, 40 grand, terrifying. And then a lot of years, and still to this day, constantly being out of my comfort zone at all times, just constantly being out of my comfort zone. And that's been what I attribute to the growth. And so where we are today, we're talking in Q1 of 2024. We just updated this for the website. We own 1.84 million square feet of real estate. Most of that's multifamily. Some of it's industrial. We own ranches all over Texas, hold notes on ranches all over Texas. We're a little over $250 million portfolio that we own. Some of that is just me. Some of it is syndicated with investors, but that's kind of the market value, $250 million. So team is 75 people. And that's just kind of what it's grown to after really just relentlessly being out of my comfort zone. And then you figure stuff out, right? I mean, you do something and go, okay, what I would call an adjacent possibility. You know, you're in one room, you only see three doors. Those are the only possibilities you know. But then you go through a door and now you're in a new room and you go, you know, there's a lot more possibilities in this room that I couldn't see from back there. And then you go through another one and it's like your vantage point changes every time you succeed at something or fail at something. And so my vantage point just kept changing and changing and is still changing to the point where we could grow the companies that big. And that's all relative. There's companies 100 times bigger. That's been my trajectory.
Yeah. So I found some fun things as I was digging into this history. 2017, 7 years ago, you were on the Bigger Pockets podcast.
Wow, was it that long ago?
And I don't know if that was the only time you've been on the show. I didn't, but in this particular one, I'm not good at anything in this business. I have to get people to do it all. Is that still true? And well, I guess both statements. Are you still not good at anything in this business? And you still just find people to do it all.
I think I've gotten good at some things. What I've found over the years is I'm the guy that will go over the hill with the machine gun first. And I thought everybody was like that, and they're not. And so you need somebody like that. You need somebody with the vision and conviction and the ability to take action with very limited information. That's what I do, right? Among other things.
And sometimes less ability. I remember, so we're developing 92 unit apartment complex here in Phoenix right now.
Cool.
And as part of that, we needed to buy some adjacent land in order to get an additional entrance. And this was my first, I didn't know that 92 units was a big deal. That was my first one.
Yep.
And so we had to buy this adjacent property. It was $800,000. I had zero of $800,000, but I put it under contract and my partner flew off the handle. He's like, where are we going to get this money? I said, I don't know, but I do know that we have to have the land and it's for sale right now. So I've got it locked up. And now we got to figure out the next part, which is where do we get this money? And so I really, really resonate with the fact that you say you're just willing to go over the hill with the machine gun. For me, that's always felt like not really sure how this is going to work out. I just know that's the right direction and I'm going to head that way. And if it doesn't work out, I got some bumps and bruises and I learned some stuff along the way, but it seems to work out.
I couldn't agree more. And I've been surprised so many times that, that worked out. And then once it works out, you sort of put this new capability and confidence in your tool chest where you go, the next challenge, you go, you know, I've seen this before. You remember that movie, The Italian Job with Mark Wahlberg? They had the Mini Coopers. The opening of the movie is they're in Italy in those cars. They do this Italian job. It's the name of the film. And it's kind of a small job. Well, later they're doing a huge job. And Mark Wahlberg says something to the effect of, this is just like the Italian job, guys, to the team. We've done this. It was a smaller scale. And I think about that over the years. Like, this is just like that other project. It's just bigger. But it's, I can do it because I've done that. I proved it to myself. I can do this. It's bigger, but it's like that other job that we did. And so it's just kind of stacking up those experiences to give yourself the confidence to take the bigger project on.
So from that period, 2012 is the first house, 2017, you're on Bigger Pockets and you don't know anything about what you're doing. What was the portfolio at that point? Was it now I have 10 units, I've got 100? How much was that five-year growth?
By 2015, I left my corporate job. So 2012, first house, really, really worked like a dog for 2012 to 2015, which is when I left my corporate job. So at that point, I had like 22 units of cash flowing real estate. One of those is a 6-unit apartment complex and then a bunch of single family. And I had started flipping houses to kind of stack capital. So I'd flipped a bunch of houses by 2017, like a lot of houses. I might have even had my first like larger multifamily, which was a 75 unit. I can't remember the exact dates. Might've been kind of getting into the larger multifamily stuff. So bought a 6-unit by myself, me and the bank. And bought a 75 unit with two other general partners and some limited partners. So that's kind of where it was. And then that was around that point, that 2017, I don't know if it was exactly then, but right around then was, hey, I was out of my W-2. And the premise there was that, gosh, if I had all my time and energy to put towards my business, which is successful by just doing it part-time, I think I could really grow this thing. So once I left the job, it did start to take off because I had all my time and energy. So the multifamily stuff started getting into it. And then it was like, that was a huge inflection point in my growth. It was the 6-unit and then a 75 and then 130 where I was running it. And then 250 unit where I was running it. And then we start stacking up like these $20 million deals that I'm running now because I've had a few years to kind of get ramped up. And that's when things really took off and changed, was getting out of that single family world and getting firmly into that multifamily world and, you know, building the whole thing, investor list, the comfort level, the relationships, the ability to execute, kind of building all those things was just a completely different animal than flipping houses, running a little rental portfolio.
So another through line on 2020, something you talked about having a goal of reaching 4,000 units. And I don't know where you were at when you made that statement, but I know the year before it was only 300 or 400 units. So somewhere there was like this hockey stick moment that happened. And I was surprised that during that time you said that you had a spreadsheet system for managing tasks. Are you still running on a spreadsheet system? And what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, no. Short answer, no. We've got a team of 75 people now. So we have an accounting department, right? We have dozens of staff on site at properties, obviously. We've got an investor relations team. So, I mean, it's completely, completely changed. A lot of it for me and my function is kind of the CEO runs out of a CRM. So there's a lot of stuff that's the brain for. And a lot of it now for me, it has to be, is just meeting with my department leaders. I can make suggestions on stuff, but I'm not doing the day-to-day work in their project management system. So love spreadsheets. I think to the youngsters listening, you know, if you can become a wizard at Excel, that's going to do more than like any single skill I can, other than sales, which is kind of a soft skill, but like a real technical skill, go learn Google Sheets and learn Excel, learn to really know your way around that thing. So yeah, I still use that all the time. But in terms of systems, yeah, I was doing it all as a solopreneur, very different as than doing it as an owner of a company that's got 75 employees. So a lot of my week looks like, hey, I'm going to meet with my director of operations. I'm going to meet with my HR administrator. I'm going to meet with my director of accounting. I'm going to meet with my director of investor relations. And we're going to work through whatever they're working on, and I help them and guide them however I can. And that's most of the work, I think. And then just trying to dream up new stuff and improve systems and work on new projects.
So in that journey from maybe dozens of units to hundreds and then thousands, were there mentors that helped with that? Did you have a coach that helped? And I'm asking that where my partner and I are looking at our business right now and going, okay, the goal is 200 million. And right now we're 10 times smaller than that. And we recognize we have to have different systems. So what helped you make that leap? Because from where we're standing, that looks huge. And I have a lot of people, and I'm sure this happens to you also, people that I go to church with or that I've known from high school that will come and say, I just can't believe what you've got going on. How did you do that?
Right.
And it doesn't seem like that big a deal from where I'm at right now, but that next step looks giant. So what advice could you give not just me, but anybody else maybe that's just looking to get started?
Yeah. So to answer your question, yes, I've had so many mentors and coaches over the years and continue to. What I found at this point is my biggest coach and mentor is running the business every day. Like there's no book to read or advice from a mentor that is going to be better than showing up and going, wow, this happened. This is incredible opportunity to learn something new. And there's been so much of that. Oh my gosh. So my business is my best teacher now because I'm doing it every day. But I've been a part of Vistage, which is a global kind of CEO peer group. I actually just left Vistage after a number of years. I'm a part of GoBundance and have been since 2017. Cool story about GoBundance. I read about it, Brandon Turner and Forbes, and I thought one day I'm going to join that group. You have had $1 million net worth. And then I thought, you know, I'd have my morning coffee, wife's asleep. I've been buying real estate. Let's add it up. I don't know. And sure enough, I was a net worth millionaire. Couldn't believe it. Thought it was going to be years away. I was already there. So I joined GoBundance. Still am in GoBundance. I think I'm a lifer for GoBundance. And then I've joined some other specific real estate masterminds over the years, especially starting out. So I'm a big believer in paying for shortcuts. But you got to start where you are and do the best with what you can. But that's anybody. But I'm a big believer in writing your goals every morning. Even today, I come in the office, clear the whiteboard off, write my top three objectives for the year, look at it, think about it, talk about it to anybody that'll listen, and just keep putting it out there. I feel like it starts off as imaginary, and then it's one little spider web. And then it's two little spider webs between this imaginary idea and where you are. And then it's three, and then it's 100 spider webs. Pretty soon it can hold weight. And then pretty soon it's a rope and a chain. And then pretty soon it's a bridge across whatever. But it starts just literally as an idea. And I'm a big believer in putting that out there. And it feels completely ridiculous. But just part of it too is just staying focused. I mean, that's the hardest thing in the world. You set a 3-year goal and focus on it every day for 3 years. Like that's a lot harder than it sounds. And pretty much nobody is willing to do that. And it's not hard to write it down and think about it every day and make sure you're just kind of, hey, you're a little bit off track, get back on track. And so that's been a big thing for me, is just writing down those bigger, longer term goals, ideating, keeping it in front of you and not having no idea how it's going to manifest itself, but obviously just working your tail off to try to get there. So yes, on mentors, big fan of having paying for specific knowledge, getting around other people. Also, there's no secrets, right? A business has to be profitable. That's, you know, you got to spend less than you make. You got to bring in more sales than your expenses. I mean, this is not rocket science. People want to work with people they know, like, and trust. I mean, kind of all these axioms that are, we all know, there's no secret, except maybe insanely hard work. And that's kind of cool that that's the secret, because just kind of this willingness to go, you know what, it might take 20 tries on this thing, and I'm willing to do 20, because nobody's, most people aren't willing to do one. Very few people are willing to do 3 or 10 tries. I'm going to do 20 tries until I get this thing right. And that, it gets very quiet on that last mile, right? So all it takes is just like an insane amount of hard work on some of this stuff, because nothing's just going to come and show up for you, right? It takes reps and grinding it out.
My guest today, Devin Elder, has talked a little bit about how aviation has changed his life, accelerated relationships with his family and his business. Aviation can be a powerful tool for changing your life and the lives of others. Angel Flight West is an organization of 2,000 volunteer pilots who use their skills as pilots, their personal aircraft, to change the lives of others by providing free flights for those in need of medical care far from home. If you or someone that you love is struggling with the challenge of traveling for non-emergency medical care, please look us up. www.angelflightwest.org. We want to use our aviation skills, our love of flying, to make a difference in your life. I love that you talk about your whiteboard, because as you're saying that, I'm looking, I've got 3 whiteboards off to my left. I've got another one off to my right. And I had never done that before until this last year. It was actually after joining GoBundance and hearing other people talk about these whiteboards. Like, thought, well, there's got to be something to that. So I went to Home Depot, picked up some cheap whiteboards, nailed them to the wall, and started writing stuff on there. And so last year was the very first year, and I had a 3-year goal, I had a 1-year goal, and then I had a monthly goal. And then every day I have a whiteboard that I write down what I need to accomplish that day that's going to move me towards that other stuff. And it really wasn't, almost every day that I looked at that 1-year goal, I thought, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Like, none of this is even within reach. You don't have the resources to do it. You don't know the people to accomplish that. This isn't going to happen. But I would still stand in the middle of my office and look at that every single morning. And then I'd write down, okay, well, if it were going to happen, what would I need to do today to make it happen? And I would write it down. And December 31st, I can remember standing there looking at that 2023 vision board and just going, oh my gosh, with the exception of like 1 or 2 things that really were just things that I didn't take any action on, everything else happened. And like what you said, I don't have really any idea how it happened. In some ways, I just think God was like, hey, you're putting in the rep, so we're going to deliver a blessing. And in other cases, I could look at it and go, you know what? I really busted my rear end to get that one. I earned that one. Some of these other ones, they were gifts. Maybe they were all gifts. But after that, I don't know if you do this, I thought, well, if that worked, I'm actually going to put pictures to the thing now. So now the home screen for my computer is a bunch of pictures and a bunch of words. And I think about that every day when I go for a walk. And I still look at that and I think, yeah, most of that stuff is just impossible. I'm 2 months into the year, it's still impossible. But yep, there's also a few things on there that I'm like, hey, I already checked that one off. This is cool. I'm not sure how this is going to play out, but this is a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. And it's, yeah, it's the damnedest thing. Put it on the board. And obviously the component is busting your tail to figure it out, but it's fascinating. There's a line in Think and Grow Rich, which I've read probably 100 times in my life, right? It said your estimation of limitations is not correct. That is your estimation of limitations. That is not the objective limitation. So you can't trust yourself, right? Clearly, people have done things, right? people just about anything you want to do. It's been done. And so if that's the case, you kind of have this mindset issue, and that's fine. But I think you have enough experience with it going, man, I'm going to put up on the board. This sounds crazy, but let's see what happens. Let's see if the magic whiteboard is going to deliver on this. And a friend of mine told me that before I bought my first large apartment complex, having dinner with him. He said, man, do you own 100 units yet? I was like, no. He's like, man, you've been at this a while. You can figure this out. You need to go buy 100 units. You need a whiteboard, put it up there, buy 100 units. And I just thought that was bonkers. But that's what I did, and that's what happens.
What's on the whiteboard now, Devin? What are the things that scare you that are crazy?
Well, some of them are kind of mundane. I want to grow our line of credit to $5 million so that we can do some cash land purchase with them. So kind of mundane, but it started off not $5 million. So I'm working on that. There's a project that I want to refinance by the summer. Huge project, most challenging real estate deal I've ever done. So that's my focus. And then we've got a fund. I want to get to $25 million this year. We're at $10 million and $11 million right now. I want to grow it to $25 million, and that'll facilitate kind of more of the deal flow that we have now. So that's it. It's refi this deal, get our lines of credit at $5 million, and fund at $25 million. That's what I walk in and write on the board every day at work. You know, I got other goals in life, but those are the work goals, and I love the simplicity of it. And it really helps me keep me honest. I'm like sitting there working and look at the board. Am I working on that? If I'm not, man, there's somebody in the company that can be taking care of it. I need to be working on this stuff. And so it's like my own kind of accountability system.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
So from where you're sitting right now, how long are you going to do this? Are you like, I just enjoy it so much. It's not really work, so I just keep doing it. Is there a point where you're like, yeah, I think I've had enough fun with this. Now, you know, I'm going to go do something else. Has that crossed your mind, or is it just right now what's on the board is on the board?
Yeah. So I don't plan on retiring. I'm 46, and maybe when if I have the privilege to get to 76, I will change my mind. But what I've found is I just simply not happy. I can't sit still. Right. And so work happens to be a very awesome way to feel engaged and be challenged. I'm a pilot too. I like to travel, right? So there might be more travel in the future, longer trips. I fly a TBM. It's pretty capable to get around, I mean, really the world. And so there might be more travel, but I was actually doing some planning on a portfolio that we're building and we might sell. And okay, what if there was a $50 million exit? Today, nothing really changes. Man, I travel with my family, but honestly, I like to get up and I like to go to work and I like to be busy. So I plan on always working. It's been a real blessing to be able to kind of refine what I work on over the years to where kind of just making the big decisions and some strategy stuff and big relationships. And I love that stuff. And it gives me purpose, right? It gives me purpose. So I don't really want to retire into anonymity. I also hear guys like Willie Nelson or Hulk Hogan out there doing their thing. And they say, man, if you slow down, you go down. And my father, who is in his 80s and has Parkinson's, he says the same thing. He's like, you just got to keep going, man. And so that's my game plan. And it, back to the kind of start of the conversation, companies are growing. We're employing a lot of people. Foundation is growing. You know, we're having a bigger impact there. And I just enjoy being a business guy. You know, I like having different businesses. I enjoy the interaction and the challenge. So again, 46, maybe in 20 years, that's different. But a long time ago, I decided that I was going to structure things so that at least as a target, every day is a good last day. So I'm not waiting for some payout and I'm going to cash a big check and go to, I met with a guy, it was actually helping us with one of our deals, and he's building these deals. And he's like, man, I just want the cash flow. And then I'm just going to go down to the Bahamas. And I was like, cool, man. What are you going to do? I'm going to go fishing. God, I said, oh, I love fishing. Man, for how long are you going to do that? Oh, man, that's just what I'm going to do. And I'm, that's your game plan? Like for life? You're going to be hating life, dude. Like there's no freaking way a go-getter wants to just turn it off. So I don't plan on that. I take a lot of trips. I literally try to structure adventure into my day as it is now, whether it's flying helicopters around with my kids or going hunting or going fishing or flying out to different cities to do work stuff and stay at cool hotels. Like that's the lifestyle's there, man. So more money wouldn't change it. And I'm certainly not like dying to get out of it. I do want to continue to build and build more robustness and layers of safety and protection into the companies and make them more anti-fragile. And so that's kind of my focus for the next couple of years. 2023 is a freaking brutal year for real estate. So there was a lot of me kind of jumping back into the trenches on some stuff and taking care of some things. And I think that's inevitable in business. But to answer your question, yeah, I don't plan on retiring. Things will change and maybe it's all over tomorrow. And hopefully I made today a good last day, but that's the focus. Grateful for every day. This could be a good last day. I'm not waiting for some big retirement check to go do the things I really want. I'm doing them right now, man. I'm doing all the things I want right now.
You and I probably hear the same thing from people. Wow. All over the news right now, it's how bad real estate is and multifamily is a terrible place to put your money. And part of inside of me, I chuckle at that sometimes. Yeah, there are some challenges out there, but what are your thoughts on that? Is that just the news? Are there really big challenges? How has that affected your company? How are you communicating with investors to maintain some positive traction there?
Yeah, so it's all the above. I mean, got to be careful watching the news and anything, right? So if it bleeds, it leads. If it's negative, and you don't want to pollute yourself with that when you got big dreams to accomplish. But man, yeah, 2023, tough year, right? So news aside, if you had variable rate debt and your interest payment on a property went from $25,000 to $50,000, man, you got to figure some stuff out. So there's some projects where you had to pause distributions to investors. They didn't like that, but I'm like, I don't know where you want to find this other $25,000 a month that was we've got to come up with now. So certainly a challenge on the variable rate stuff. There was a deal that I had to take over from a partnership. Huge challenge for me last year. So those are kind of within my company, some things that we're dealing with. In general, like the stuff we're seeing right now, I cannot believe the basis that we're getting stuff at, that we're buying stuff at. So it's scary when you're in it, but it's like, this is when you buy it, right? Everybody's like, and I tell my acquisitions team, like, guys, at some point in the near future, we're not going to be only bidder at the table here. Like there's going to be 20 bids bidding this thing up again. That's just a matter of time before that happens. We're literally like the only bidder. We've had brokers tell us like, hey, does this work at any number? And you're going, man, I would have killed to hear that 2 years ago.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like I think right now is an opportunity for a basis play. You get in a good asset at a good basis, figure out how to make the capital stack work. Maybe it's low leverage agency debt with some pref equity or different classes of shares so that you can make a 55% leverage deal work with some extra equity in there, different class of shares. Maybe it's assuming debt. Maybe it's taking on a bridge loan at a high interest rate, but hey, your basis is pretty good. I think there's ways to get it done. Multifamily is not going anywhere. I mean, come on. If you're in the right market and there's net positive migration and good outlook on jobs and things like that. We're Central Texas. So I feel very, very good about that as a market. Multifamily's not going anywhere. Inflation's not going anywhere. It's just a matter of time where this stuff corrects, if history's any teacher. So it's hanging on through this cycle that we're in. And personally, I think acquiring a couple of assets at a really good basis, if you can make that work.
So for the guy that's just trying to start out, is right now a bad time to get started?
Not at all, because to get started, you have to do so much stuff other than buy a deal. Right? You've got to build a brand. You've got to build an investor list. You've got to build connections. You've got to network. You've got to go to conferences. None of those are buying a deal. And you need to bust your tail doing those things in the first year, 2 years, 3 years. None of those things are buying a deal. So don't wait until market conditions are good to start. Man, join a coaching program. Get your brand launched. Start talking to people. Set up your CRM and your system so you're not fooling with that stuff later. Get out of your comfort zone. Go to conferences. Go try to speak. Go try to get on podcasts. Like all these things that are not buying deals, start getting the reps in on that stuff right now. That's what we tell people all the time. And then you're in a better position because you're going to need a ramp up period. Might as well ramp up now while you're not inundated with deals. Or if you can get in a position to close a deal that's at a good price, okay, do that. But there's so many things that are not buying a deal that you need to do as a real estate investor that you can be doing, absolutely be doing right now.
I think both in real estate investing and flying airplanes, I was surprised at the work required to do just that. When I went to fly planes, I just thought, well, yeah, you just get in and you fly the plane, right? I had no idea you had to learn about mechanics and avionics and weather and health and navigating. And another million and one things that it was just a completely foreign thing to go in and learn all this. And I love what you just said in real estate too, because as you were saying that, I'm looking back and I'm like, yeah, I'm having a lot of people say right now, wow, it looks, I can't believe you just bought another property or whatever it is. And, but as you were saying, I'm walking back and I'm like, yeah, 4 years ago, I knew nothing about any of this. And I did just that. I went to a lot of meetups. I spent a lot of nights away from my family getting education because I didn't know what to do. And then once I knew what to do, then you're just scared to death to take some action on that, because now you're putting at risk, it's your own money in the beginning, right? It's like, you, that might be the only 40 grand you have, and you just put it in this dump of a house that you're just praying turns out to make you a dollar or two. And that first one for me didn't do that. It didn't make me money, but it sure taught me a lot. But that's been the only one that didn't make money. And after that, I learned the lessons. And so that was actually the cheapest education I've ever paid for, was what I lost on that house. What kind of parallels do you see between those two worlds, both that education component that's just part of the price that you have to pay for either getting into business, real estate, flying airplanes, whatever it is?
Yeah, it's no fun starting out and being overwhelmed. Aviation was so incredibly overwhelming, but you have to go through the reps and build the muscle memory, right? For me to make, or a pilot listening, make a radio call and, you know, shoot an IFR approach, like these are immensely complex things that are just muscle memory now. And so you just kind of have to do the same thing with your real estate business. It's just get a ton of reps in until it's muscle memory. And that's hard and no fun and nobody wants to do it. That's why few do, but it's just reps. And I think you can count the reps as a win, and you should, rather than, hey, I'll be successful when I buy 100 units, right? That's such a big setup for being disappointed. Number one, because when you get there, you're going to realize, oh, that's just a win like a million other wins I've had. It doesn't feel 100 times bigger. Every win kind of feels the same on an emotional registry. So don't set yourself up to only celebrate the win at the big goal 3 years from now. You should really be celebrating every day that you took a step. If I would study for 30 minutes and I would keep a calendar. All right, I'm going to do ground school online for 30 minutes today, and I'm going to freaking call that a win. And I do it and I go, man, I have so far to go. No, you did it, man. You did the thing. If you do that 30 days in a row, you're going to be good. You do that for 60 days in a row, like you're going to get there. So just chalking up those wins. And I kind of coach people to do the same thing. If you had three investor prospective conversations this week, dude, that's a win. Yeah, of course you're not buying 100 units yet, but those are all pieces that lead up to that. So daunting things, you know, can be broken far enough down to where they're manageable daily things. It's just having the tenacity and the faith to, or the stupidity to just keep going, right?
Ignorance or faith, or maybe both.
Maybe both, yeah.
I think for anybody learning how to fly, there are moments of bliss where you're just like, man, I can't believe I get to do this. And then there's other moments where you might be saying, I can't believe I just did that and I'm okay at the end of it. Have you had any of those moments, a really memorable flight or experience, or maybe the other end where you just were like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this?
Yeah, a couple of both. I mean, so many memorable times just with my kids or my family, flying that helicopter around Texas, flying down to the beach, so beautiful, flying down to ranches, doors on, doors off, hunting out of the helicopters. So lots of fun stuff. We actually had a family trip. I was never fearful, but this was like a couple of weeks ago, and I thought I could get San Antonio to Fort Worth, DFR. And I got 60% of the way. I'm out in the middle of Texas, flying over people's ranches, and that cloud layer coming lower. And
you're in the helicopter, not the TV.
In the helicopter, yeah, and it's not IFR. So ended up putting it down, side of a road. People were taking video and stuff. Collect my thoughts, pull it up, pull up for a flight. Hey, man, there's a little airport mile away from here. We're just going to set it down. And so, you know, it's one of those situations where I thought the weather was going to cooperate with me. It didn't. Pushed it as far as I was comfortable. But you're getting low in that helicopter to the point where you're like, there's wires out here. And the big things are charted, but, you know, I got my fan. Like, come on. You don't want to have any doubt about that. And that's how guys die in helicopters. So put it down at a little airport. Met some really cool guys that worked there and the owner. My daughter's in cheer. We were taking her to Fort Worth for cheer. He gave us the crew car for the weekend and we drove the rest of the way. So that was kind of the one thing in aviation for me that was like, we had to abort that trip and it didn't go as planned. So some of the other adventures though, kind of high points, taking a TBM to the Bahamas. Just incredible.
Is that intimidating for the first time to leave the country and fly under different air traffic control? I haven't had that experience yet, but it's on the pilot bucket list.
I cheated. So I kind of went about my whole aviation journey in a weird way. I bought my helicopter before I was licensed. So I owned a helicopter. We would train in it, and it was the most frustrating thing in the world. I couldn't just go fly it. Then I did the same thing with the TBM. So bought the TBM, and we were just hire pilots. And I'm sitting right seat. I'm learning, logging, dual receive time, but I'm not pilot in command. So we had a pilot take us to Nassau. So for me, totally fun and educational and a good time. I have not been pilot command out of the country. A lot of paperwork to fill out. Good thing is the whole world's English. Air traffic control all around the world is in English. I'm like, man, we lucked out on that. We lucked out on that.
That's the truth. That West Texas weather can jump up on you, or maybe it's anywhere in Texas, but that the scariest experience I've had in an airplane was over Texas, and I was surprised at how quickly the storms can roll across those flat plains. And I purchased a Cessna in St. Augustine, Florida, and was flying it back home to Arizona.
Yep.
And storms were a long way away when I started. Man, they sure caught up real quick, and that was not a fun experience, but I sure learned a lot.
What'd you end up doing?
Well, where I was, so I was kind of maybe 2 hours east of El Paso, and there's nothing there. There's not an airport. There's, I don't know, there weren't even any great roads, it looked like. And so I got tossed around for probably about 2 hours, where wind just, when you have a 60 knot wind and a 90 knot airplane, you're not having a fun time. And then when I got over El Paso, a giant dust storm came in. And so I was a week away from my instrument check ride and in complete instrument conditions. And literally going through my head was, I'm the next AOPA safety video. I'm going to be the idiot in the airplane that got caught in weather. And fortunately was, and this is a miracle all by itself. I was able to climb that Cessna up to 12,000 feet and get above the dust. But now I had another problem. I was running low on fuel and I couldn't see the ground. And I was just kind of circling west of El Paso, hoping some of that dust would clear. And I was able to spot the Dona Ana jet port underneath me and just circled down. I had about a 35 knot crosswind. And if you've ever attempted to land a Cessna in a 35 knot crosswind, know how much fun that was. When I got on the ramp, I think I just sat in the seat and shook for about 5 minutes, just the adrenaline releasing and just the recognition that situations can change really quickly. And yeah, sure, this has been true for you, but there's so many correlations to that in business too. Like, what saved me is I had invested in additional training because I wanted to be safe. Now, I was working to become a commercial pilot, not because I wanted to make money flying the plane, but I wanted the training that came along with it. I was working on my instrument rating for that same reason. And if I hadn't had that, I probably am not sitting here today because I wouldn't have known what to do. And I think that's so true in business also. And that's where mentoring and education, you know, it changes. I'm not going to the same meetups today that I was before, but that was part of the reason for the podcast is that now, maybe it opens a few doors where I get to peer behind the curtain at a Devin Elder who's a few years ahead of me and just go, oh, okay. Well, he had a vision board. I've got a vision board. We're doing that right. And I think that's so important, gaining the education, but also the fact that I think a few years ago you said that education without action or without implementation is just entertainment. I love that because you can just get caught in that YouTube loop, whether it's been flying airplanes and doing business and never actually step into real life and do it.
That's right.
And I think if there's anything that I'm learning from talking to you today is that continual action, just taking one step forward, even if it's just a little baby step.
Yeah, 100%. So many parallels.
Yeah. What have been the setbacks along the journey? What are things that you look back and go, man, I sure wish I hadn't have done that or I'd done that different?
I would say it's mostly consists of setbacks, like 90%. 90% setback. So I would say like what wasn't a setback almost, right? And I mean, if you zoom out far enough, okay, I was born in this era, in America with half a brain. Okay, you're already like way ahead. Something I was thinking about recently, which never occurred to me in my life. My younger brother was bigger than me growing up. And it never occurred to me until last week that I think I developed sort of maybe a financial mind because I couldn't beat him when we were kids. And he was my little brother. And it was so hard for me. And that was like since day one and since we were kids. And so I think that forced me to kind of overcompensate with, you know, I'm going to go win in life because I can't beat up this kid. And he's my little brother. And he's bigger and stronger than me. That was such an impactful thing on me early on that it created a coping mechanism, right? In the way maybe that somebody develops a sense of humor as a coping mechanism. I think I developed kind of a financial analytical mind that I was going to go figure stuff out and I was going to go be successful in a way that wasn't in a physically dominant way because that way wasn't working for me. So in that sense, that setback was a gift. And isn't that the case? Like Dan Sullivan says, our failures are raw material for the things that we're going to go build. I just couldn't agree more. And it sucks. And I wish it wasn't that way. But where we are as a company is the result of banging my head against 10,000 other closed doors. And these were the only ones that were open, that were left. And they happen to be what we've built today is really all that's left from a graveyard of failures. Now, nothing fatal. Nothing, never lost investor capital, right? Never defaulted on a bank loan, right? I mean, the big stuff, fine. Never had criminal issues, things like that. But within the course of everyday business, every mistake imaginable, right? Everyone imaginable.
So when you're zooming out, you might be able to look and say, wow, this has just been 15 years of success. Everything's gone right. You've gone from one house to 5,000 or whatever the count is right now. But along the journey, did it feel like you were succeeding or did all those failures have the tendency to mess with your mind, right?
It's been all the above. I remember the early wins were so dopamine inducing. They were difficult to deal with. You know, what's funny is like a $30 million deal closing right now does nothing for me emotionally. It just kind of, I'm at work. I remember driving around San Antonio with my third rental house and I thought I was the king of the city. I'm driving around the highway. I've got three now and a house that I live in. I'm like basically a king. I'm a king.
Yeah.
Let's just come out and say it. I'm basically a king. I'm basically king of the city. Never owned real estate. And now I had three rental houses producing cash flow. Like the dopamine was so, I remember being at work and my day job trying to do both things and a closing would come through. And I just felt like I wanted to just scream at the top of my lungs in this cube farm and give somebody a hug and a kiss. It was just like, so many highs, but the big highs were earlier on. As you progress, it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, it kind of what it is. I've been thinking about this concept lately, and it's the energy you need to think about the thing that you want and then imagine yourself having it and being bored with it. And that's the energy you need to have because that is what will happen, right? For me to go fly a helicopter down to the beach right now, it's cool, cool experience, but like, and not that I'm bored, but it is.
Not the same rush as the first solo flight.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So there's been so many highs and lows along the way. And now at this point in my life, I literally wake up and I'm just like so grateful for another day. Let's see what comes. So grateful to just have the gift of another day. And I think that gratitude focus is that works best for me.
What are your daily habits now that keep you going?
Yeah, I have a pretty good habit. I used to get really down on myself on getting 100% of stuff. And now I'm shooting for like 70. So I have a weekly, I have sheet, Apple Notes. What's an ideal week look like? I want to be getting sun 3 times a week. I want to be doing grounding 3 times a week. I want to be eating. All I eat is meat, right? So we can debate that till the cows come home, but it absolutely works for me. So I want to keep super clean diet. I want to have no more than 1 cup of coffee. I want to work out 3 times a week and I have a very kind of specific, simple workout regimen. And those are the things I've found health-wise that keep me happy. And I've built my life to kind of incorporate those things and have just baked those into a good week. Super simple stuff, easy to do, not overly difficult. It's just keeping them in front of me and executing it. So those are the habits. And then at work, I have a pretty good routine with system and kind of tasks that I work through and meeting with my direct reports and kind of the things I need to get done in a week so that feel good on Friday. And I like to work hard, man. I'll come down to the office sometimes at 5 in the morning. You know, I'm an early riser and I will drive down and miss traffic and start working on stuff. And I'll go home sometimes at 5 or 6 at night. Now, I could take the whole week off if I wanted, but that's how I operate best is working a lot. And I found that that works well for my balance with my family, because then I really enjoy my time with them when I am with them and I can be present. Those are my current habits, I guess you could say.
Awesome. One of the things that my dad, one of the things he said most often was, Alan, remember the little things. And one of the purposes behind this show is to identify the little things that anybody can implement today that will move the needle in their life. So maybe as you look at yourself, where you're just starting out in your real estate journey, what would be a few little things that you would either say to yourself or somebody in that position?
There's so many tactical things, but I'll tell you the one thing for me now is I wake up early and my mind's racing, right? We're always, man, it's like your guard's down. And I remember I was going through a particularly difficult time last year on a deal that total disaster, and since become not a disaster, but it was very difficult. And I remember just praying, dear God, please see me through this deal. And the answer immediately was, you have everything, man. You have healthy kids. You are beyond blessed, and you have a challenge in front of you. So just freaking deal with it. But the real blessings, your health and your family, you have in abundance. And so that's kind of my number one thing right now is, as soon as I wake up in the morning, I literally write down the date and time and say, thank you, God, for another day. And there's so many things that are outside of my control, but thank you for that, for my health and my family. And that's the bottom line. I already won today. I'm awake and I have my health and my family. That's a win. Anything else is going to be gravy on top of that. And I wasn't that way when I was pursuing all this stuff, but I think that's my number one thing. And I would advocate anybody do that.
Was there an experience or anything that brought that so forefront? Did you lose somebody close to you? Is it for me, and you and I have had this conversation, but you know, I lost my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, my dad all in a 2-year period. And so literally on the home screen of my phone for the last several years has been just two words, be there. That was my number one goal. I wanted to be there for my family. And that meant I needed to get healthy. That meant I needed to be financially free. And those two words have motivated me to make a ton of changes. You've said several times how grateful you are for just one more day. So I'm really curious, was there somebody that didn't get that where that affected you? Or is that just, you've grown into that?
I think I've grown into it. I mean, I've had friends die over the years. I'm fortunate that my parents are both here. My siblings are here, and I haven't had a close death. I think for me, that came out of really getting my butt kicked last year on a deal that I just could not see a way out of. Middle of just feeling overwhelmed by that, that kind of brought my focus back to gratitude. And so that's what it was for me. It wasn't necessarily death of a family member, but it was being completely pushed up against the wall and not seeing a way out on a deal that we ended up figuring a way out on. But that was at the time, middle of last year, it was as dark as it got.
I love the perspective, Devin. With your foundation, is that your company capital and yours that's doing these projects? Can other people participate in that? And if they want to, how do they find you there if that's an option? And then your track record should be very compelling to investors to be able to, especially in today's market, to be able to claim you've never lost investor capital. And sure, there's sometimes adjustments. So those two ways, if somebody wants to participate with you, either on the charitable side or in any of these deals that you're doing, what's the best way to go about doing that?
Yeah, I think on the foundation, we haven't opened it up yet. I'm content to just, if our company grows, foundation grows, and we can write grants. And maybe in the future that changes, just haven't built it. On the investment side, our website's DJE Texas, Delta Juliet Echo Texas.com. And you sign up to learn more about our projects. We've got a fund doing different land, industrial, and multifamily stuff out of San Antonio. So would welcome a call to chat with folks if they're interested in that.
Okay, one last thing. What would be some little things that you want to pass on to your kids? What do you hope for them? What are some little things you hope that they remember?
I hope they see me chasing my dreams and have the courage to follow that example, not because I told them to, but because they had that example. We need examples for anything we do, and I hope I am that for them. And their dreams might be completely different than my dreams, and I don't care, but I hope they have the courage to chase their dreams.
That's awesome. Devin, thanks for spending some of your day with me today. This has been awesome. And we're going to do some helicopter hog hunting here in the near future. I feel that I'm going to put that on the whiteboard and we're going to make that happen.
It's going to happen, man. Alan, thanks so much. This is fun. I was looking forward to this. I saw this on my calendar and this, I think you have you've been on my podcast and I really enjoyed that exchange, but I like the angle that you have here on this podcast. And I was honored to be a part of it. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. My dad used to tell me, Alan, remember the little things. Remembering the little things is the key to plain success. The key to a life motivated by hope, filled with happiness, blessed with prosperity, and powered by purpose. If there was at least one little thing in this episode that uplifted, inspired, or motivated you, will you do a little thing for me? Share this episode with someone else. Until next time, remember the little things.